This is interviews. Gosh.
The real professional thing you got. We got to keep that. You got to keep it.
That's why we haven't brought professionals on.
I get two words. With it. Oh, God. Keep it. We'll do it live.
This is Interviews with Technical People with John Robertson.
And James Haview.
A podcast where we interview technical people in STEM fields.
To discuss the past, present, and future from their perspective. Today we're joined by Tim Robertson. Tim is an animator making video games. Tim, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
Now, you may be wondering.
Yes, go on.
You may be wondering, how many people can we find whose last name is Robertson? Is it a coincidence?
It's not.
I think that we might be related, but James can give the final thing here. What do you think, James?
I don't know. You guys look pretty similar. The glasses match. The hair matches.
The glasses do match. Yeah, I don't really wear glasses. These are just fake. These are for show.
Eye protection?
This is eye protection. Yeah. Because I look at screens all day. This is what I got to do.
I just know that I'm not related.
We are brother. For those of you who don't know. But we're not only brothers. We brought Tim on the show because he is involved in a topic that I know a lot of you will be interested in, which is that he makes video games. Yes, I said it. You heard it right. He is an animator who brings the video games to life. And I know these days a lot of people play video games. And unfortunately, James and I don't really. So we'll come from that perspective. But I know a lot of you do. So hopefully we get to all of your questions and you learn how they're made.
Speaking of that, I think the video game industry is bigger than the movie and the music industry combined now. I think I heard that recently.
Is it really?
Either way, it's gigantic.
Is that a COVID thing or is that just a thing?
No, I actually haven't heard too much from the COVID numbers. I know that we at Electronic Arts are doing wonderful, but I don't know about the industry as a whole. I'm assuming it's doing great. Everyone's sitting home doing nothing but staring at their TV, so let's give them something to play.
It could be listening to music or watching movies or playing video games instead.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm wondering, like, I'm sure it has something to do with the fact, like, movies are very difficult to make. Video games are too. Like, same time, you know, amount of time generally, but, like, video games cost so much more than going to, like, a movie theater.
As far as buying the video game?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the reason is, but it's definitely huge.
We used to buy video games all the time. And I remember it always used to be like in the realm of $50 for a new game.
Is that so? The new ones are $70 or free. It's like a nice in between. Yeah, there's this new model called free to play, which is for all the Fortnite fans out there. Fortnite is a huge game. Everyone's doing Fortnite, and it's completely free. And where they get you is they'll sell you a pair of pants or like a weapon or something. Or a dance move, and then they pay incrementally like that. But it's a good model because, at least for the companies, it's like, well, we could just keep making pants and keep going past that $60-$70 mark.
I was
going
to say, or spending $70 in pants and dancing,
yes,
to make up for it.
Yeah, there's
no overhead, so people jump right in.
Right, yeah. So there's a lot of like little kids that you hear stories about, like just taking their parents' account or whatever, and like the guy finds like $10,000 worth of video game apparel or whatever have you.
Goodness.
Or you could do like I do and just do completely free. I'm not going to pay for a cent. I've got the generic outfits on all the games. I want the free stuff. That's what I want. So, but it leaves room for both.
I'm like that with games on my phone.
Yeah,
I'll play games on my phone as long as I spend $0.
I will sit through a 3-minute advertisement.
Yep.
If I have to pay 1 cent, forget about it.
Why don't we talk for a little bit about, so you said you worked at Electronic Arts. And I know since you work for a company, you can't just disclose everything that you do. But to the extent that you can, why don't you tell us what you do and what goes into making a game here in 2020?
First of all, I'll slip it in now. I feel like that's by far the hardest part of working in the games industry is like the code of secrecy that you have to abide by. Like there's so many things that you see on the internet where it's like you could just say a sentence and it feels like you would fix so many criticisms, or like it would be so nice to just say this, and it feels safe to say, but you can't say anything. It's really tough to like be working on something for 4 years and not be able to say what it is. Like they go through this in movies too and other stuff like that, but like that's a tough part.
So it's a big secretive operation.
Yeah, and there's a lot. Like there's been times in the past where like there's been documentaries on it I've seen, where there was one on Netflix a couple years ago where like this indie gamer developer, he was making this game, and like he kept promising, oh, there's going to be a release at this date, we're going to have an update at this date, and then like you ran out of funding or something happened, and then like there's just so much disappointment based on the fact that you promised something. So it's like, you don't want to promise anything, you don't want to talk about anything, just keep it quiet. So, but anyway, I work on a sports title. I work on Madden at the moment, and I came from the NBA Live title, the basketball game. And it's very quick turnarounds for sports games. It's basically one a year at the current rate. Whereas a lot of other games like action games or adventure games, they sometimes could take like 5 years. You know, like Zelda might take 5 years, 6 years, who knows? But we turn them around pretty quick, which is also one of the criticisms that we get as well. So basically what that means is that we have a very condensed cycle. So we release a game and then we get right back onto it. So it's like what I do from day to day depends on what point of the cycle we're in.
So also real quick, it seems like sports games do that more than most, where it'll be like Madden 2019, Madden 2020, Madden 2021. Like that's just their sequence that they go in. But a lot of other games, they don't do that. There's no like Zelda 2005, Zelda 2006. It's just a fresh new idea.
Yeah, but there's a lot of discussion around that. Like one of the things too is like we have a game that is like bound by something that everyone knows, right? It's we're not going to reinvent football.
I guess that's true. So this part season also comes once a year.
Right. So if you make a Zelda game or a Mario game, like you don't want to just play those same things again. Like some people don't want to play that in Madden also, but like if you make a platformer or some other sort of 3D game, it's like we want to see a different Bowser. We want to see a different Goomba or whatever, you know? It's like show us something different. And there's a little of that in sports too, but like for the most part, this is a football game. This is a basketball game. We're going to update the rosters. We're going to give you new features. We're going to new tech, new ways of doing things.
So you're not rebuilding the game. You're just tweaking it and
sometimes
updating it.
Sometimes we do. And like sometimes you don't even realize it. And you might not even feel it. We might make a change that would help us down the road make a huge impact, right? Like we might spend a whole year doing some sort of prep work for some big thing that we have 3 years from now. So there's a lot that goes into it. But yeah, like depending on the year or what time of year it is, like we come up with a design that like it's basically made by three major pillars. There's like a designer, an engineer, and an animator. There's also like producers and like social media guys and stuff like that. But like those three heads are working very closely to come up with a plan or a design document. And we might say like this, we want to, I'll take basketball, for example, this year we want to be able to add someone who can dribble behind their back. Right. And then the engineer and the animators will come up and say like, okay, well, what's it going to cost to do that? And, you know, manpower and technology and stuff like that. And can we do it? And we have this huge list of desires that we want to do. And it gets whittled down to the highest priorities and we go from there. And then we might prototype something. We might test it out, see it doesn't work, and then move on to the next thing. But yeah, like day to day, like I was trained as an animator, and I came to the company as an animator. And to simplify what an animator does, like animation is just like making something move, like the illusion of life is what they call it, like from the Disney days. Like animation started not too long ago, and when it first started, like they didn't even have, like there was no such thing as an animator. They just like, okay, we think that if we put lots of drawings together and put it on film and it'll move just like a, you know, live action. And that's what, like when you think about what like animation is, like in film, it's 24 frames per second of film, like traditionally. So like that means 24 drawings to make up 1 second, which is over the course of a 2-hour movie. That's a lot of drawings. That's a lot of paintings. That's a lot of sketching and stuff like that.
And I just want to point out, I don't often think about that. That's what a movie, like what we call a movie, is just a series right. of photographs, like still photographs. And when you flash them by at a fast rate, it looks like a, oh, I think grandma one time called it a moving picture. Remember that on the front porch?
I got the pictures. You see the latest picture. Yeah, it's just a collection of images. Like, if you ever just think about what a film strip is, we've all seen film strips.
Mm-hmm. Those old reels.
At least people in our age group or older have. I don't think the kids have seen a film.
These new guys.
But, like, it's just a picture followed by another picture followed by another picture. And, like, one of the first things of that basically animation is called, like, a zoetrope. And I don't know if you've ever seen a zoetrope, but, like...
Never heard of it.
It's basically, it looks like, if you could imagine like a circular cake that's completely hollow, and there's like little slits in around the outside of it. And then you basically spin it around and you're looking through these slits, and on the inside of this thing, there's like, the first one was like a picture of a horse running. And then the next picture, if you spin it a little bit more, you'll get to the frame where it's a picture of a horse taking the next part of the run cycle, and then the next part of the run cycle. So if you spin it fast enough, your brain will perceive motion, basically. So like, that's how they started doing some animation testing like that. It's like they just spun this thing and like had this repeating cycle, a horse like jumping up and down or running. But yeah, it's just like, how does our brain perceive pictures and put it into motion? And that's what a film strip is, and that's what animation is. That's where it started. Like, now it's harder to conceptualize that now that everything's digital. You know, it's not like we don't have individual frames per se like that. Like, even though if you're using the animation software, like, you can break it down and go frame by frame, but like, you never view it like that anymore. But that's where it started.
So you're doing continuous motion now.
Yeah. So basically, when you use the animation software, like, depend, like what I do, we use motion capture. I would say 99.9% of the time, and we can get into that later. But like, if you're not using motion capture, you're starting with a completely blank screen. And think of it like Gumby, like claymation or stop motion animation. Like, you have this, you can have a model or a character there, and it's completely still. And you have a timeline like you do in like a video editor. You start at frame one, and you could set a pose and manipulate the character. And then you go to frame 10 or something like that. And then you go to frame 20. And basically, that's how you start off if you're not using motion capture. It's called just like hand keys or keyframing. And you set those keys, like the basic movement of it. So it might be like, take a jump, for example. Like, frame one would be like a guy in a squat position. And then the top of that would be the guy in the air, and then the guy has to come back down the ground. So you can start off with three basic frames, and then everything from there is called in-betweening. You fill in the in-betweens. That's where you get your timing and you like the appeal that you will get from an animation. But everything starts from like as few frames as possible, and then you just build up upon it.
So is it up to you to make it look lifelike then? Because I could just imagine if I did something like that, it would look very robotic. But yours, I mean, the stuff that comes out now looks extremely natural.
So yeah, so basically, you have, if you're a keyframe animator, you have a lot of time if you're like on a feature film to make something. Like, you could be working on like a 5 second little clip all week long for just like 5 seconds, and you could be finessing it. And then you might go to a meeting and someone might give you a note on it and say like, well, I think this hand needs to be over here. I think it would give a nice flow to it. Like, then you go back and you might scratch the whole thing. You go through the process of really making this look great.
And how different is the animation that you do for games compared to like a Hollywood feature film type animation?
Well, I don't think it's that much different now. So the big thing about game animation is like in Hollywood or like TV animation, like you can cheat a lot. If you wanted to, like, you are looking at one viewpoint and you control that, like the director or the makers of these things, they control what you see. So like, for example, there's a lot of animated movies now where they have huge heads, you know, like in little tiny bodies. Just like that. That's the appeal of that character design. And if they go to hug, well, you can angle it in a certain way that makes it so, like, I just saw this on like Trolls, for example. They have some behind the scenes stuff where this giant troll head hugs another character with a giant troll head with their little tiny bodies. They probably can't even reach the top of their heads because their arms are so short, but you don't show that. Like, you cheat that. And like, so the way they did it is you have this view that you're looking at, and like they go from the side, one troll sort of covers up the other troll's head. But then they showed like the behind the scenes. What does it look like if you actually pan the camera around? We're not going to do that in the movie, but what does it look like? And like, you see like their faces are completely like in each other, basically. Like the mesh is just it's just one head from the side. But from the view you're being shown, it looks like a perfectly normal hug. So there's a lot of cheating that you need to do in those sort of things. So like for games, the cool thing about games, and I think why it's getting so popular, is that it is like you're sort of the director. Like we have this basic storyline for you, but like
you you're being in the control player.
You as the consumer, the player, you are in control of your journey, whether it be a sports game or a Mario game or whatever. So it's like, so we need to make sure that like if you did want to go explore this rock over here on the side of the level, we need to make sure that rock looks good from all sides. You know, we can't just.
The movie doesn't care what the rock looks like.
Yeah, we don't even show the back. There is no backside of the rock. It's just like a flat surface. So game animation is a little bit more difficult like that. Like you need to really account for that. You need to spin your camera around in your software when you're animating it. Make sure this looks good from every single angle. Whereas in you know, film and TV, just make it look good from this one angle. So
there's a question that's been on my mind too, which is, I remember playing games with you back in like the late 90s, and we've seen how they've evolved to where back then they looked very rudimentary, right? They're very pixelated. We remember like NBA Jam and all that, where it seemed like every single year they got more lifelike looking. What's been behind that? Like, are just the animators getting better? Are there like, does your software give you tweaks now that just make it easier to make it look more lifelike? Like, what's driving this?
So it's everything. Like, even right down to the fact that this studies are better. Like, students come out of college better. Like, when I came out of school, like, my demo reel, which is something you put together, like, it's basically like a animator's resume. It's just a collection of your animations. But, like, my demo reel was terrible. Now, if you look at a student's demo reel, it's like, this is, like, feature-quality animation right now. And it's the availability of the software that like you can train on and stuff like that. But also in games specifically, it's like we didn't have the, you know, you start with the 8-bit generation and the 16-bit generation. And then so the more you add, the more things you can put in there. So it's like, that's one of the tough things.
Generation.
This, now we're getting into computer talk and you got to get a software engineer on the shows.
Did we get Pablo back?
No, they get Pablo back on the show. But now we're getting into some really, you know, it's just basically like for the layman.
Are we talking about like how there's bigger like processors now?
It's like more computing power, more memory, more hard drive space, right? So it's like, that's one of the problems we run into now. It's like we might have had a feature in Madden or NBA like in 2004 that, well, people are like, well, why isn't that here now? Well, it's like, well, back then it was like so much simpler. Like, we didn't even have finger animation back then. Like, think back to like the old days of platforming games. Like, Mario's fist was a fist. That's it. It doesn't open, doesn't close. It's just always in this fist. So it's like, well, every new feature you add has to account for this new technology too. So it's like, you might get more power and more tech, but you might actually have to remove features because it's like, well, we can't ship this game with this old looking junk now that the rest of the game looks like this. So we have to like, so like take like a walk, right? Or a run, just locomotion around a level. Take like pretend it's a ninja or something, right? Like you start off, and in the old days, it's like you press forward on the controller and he might run forward and his feet might even spin in place, right? Like there was no way to control your speed. It was just like you let go of it and he comes to a complete stop. Well, now it's like, We have the power to, that's one animation too, like, or two animations, like a stop, a run, and to a stop. Now it's like, Well, we might start off with a little bit of a lean and then we might start into a slower walk. And if you compress the controller a little bit, then he might go into a jog, or then he might go into a full speed run, or you can hold turbo. He goes into a sprint. Now we're blowing up the amount of animations we have to have. Now we have finger movements. Now we might have to render like hair, right? And we might have to render cloth. Like all this takes power and all this computing power, right? So it's like,
and you've got the issue that like posture is different on a slow walk than a fast walk.
Right. So we have different types of guys, right? So that sometimes like sports video games are really difficult to make, because it's like if you play, I keep bringing Mario up because he's iconic, but like that's one set of animations you need to make. For like an NBA game, I got to get LeBron's run style. I got to get LeBron's dribble style. I got to get LeBron's walk style. Now I got to get, you know, Kevin Durant's run. And like, and we don't always have that, but like, that's the goal. Like you want to, that's what we're trying to get to. How do we get there? What tech can we use to help fake it too? It's like, cause we can't, we don't have the power to do 300 different animation styles, you know,
to compare it to the movies again too. Like for a movie, like you said, you can kind of cheat. It only has to do one thing, but for a game, it's so dynamic. You're being controlled at all times by a joystick or a button. And so they might be in the middle of one motion and then they have to pivot to another. And that transition has to be seamless.
So right now that's really difficult too, because it's like back in the old days, it's like, well, we want this one mode where they can do this or whatever. But back in the old days, it's like, you turn and it's that same straight ahead animation. They just put a rotational filter on it. So there's no lean into it. There's no plant and pivot. Yep. And we've all seen this. And even if you don't feel it, but now it's like, well, there's new technology even in the last few years. Boy, we can jump all over the place here. We got to, so there's a lot of new technology that's come out recently where, we could jump to where this is going in the future. We can jump back to, but in the future, like a lot of stuff,
you were
going to
ask that anyway.
Yeah. So a lot of the stuff is like, well, where is AI taking this? Where is automation taking this? And smart, you know, adaptive learning and all that fun stuff that is way beyond me. I just use the tools that they present to us. But anyway, like take that same run cycle, right? And we want to do a turn. So in the old days, it's just that same straight ahead animation rotated. So then we get to a point like 10 years ago where we might say, okay, I want to request a turn and I want this character that I'm in control of to make a turn. So as an animator, you might set that up in the game engine where we say, so if we are listening for an input and we see that there is a turn requested, well, we have to have a condition in this animation that will branch us from the straight ahead to a turn. You could also be, okay, straight ahead to a turn run, straight ahead to a turn walk. You blow it up infinitely, right? So it's like, well, straight ahead jog to a turning jog. So I'm going to put the branch. I'm going to say, okay, I have this other turn animation that starts like this and it's in this pose. I'm going to start the animation when his left foot hits the ground, because I know that my next animation starts with his left foot on the ground. So now with motion synthesis, which is like basically pretty much every game is using this, and if they're not, they're trying to, and we call it something else internally, and but basically what that is we let the computer, we listen for that signal again, if you're turning, but we let the computer decide when is the best place to branch out to the next animation. So with that, it's like you have a whole bucket of animations that you throw in there. You don't have to curate it as much. Like you can curate it if you wanted to, but like we do motion capture of a guy like running around in circles, and like we put that in the system and we can tag it up. Like, this is a turn. This is whatever. And it matches you can have it match the skeleton. You can have it match the speed. You can have it match the posing, and it will decide. You can control how you want it. Like you might want it to just transition rapidly, but you might also want it to look seamless. So like the user will never know that it's two separate animations, and it will decide when it wants to go to the next one.
So is that still an animator thing? That seems like so complex. The question that comes to my mind is, how does the computer know better than we do? Because I think as humans, we have the best, we have the best judgment for what looks natural, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the computer can judge what looks natural.
That's part of the thing. It's like, well, we always have the say in what looks best. But at the same time, it's like, like I said, every little new piece of tech and software and hardware that comes out, like, we can do more. So it's like, we need help from the computer to, like, we want it to do this so we can focus on this other thing now and build this other feature up. So it's like, you can make it look really good and you can finesse it by hand, but it's like, there's this way that will get you pretty much there, and you could still curate, like, and you can break it down and make it look even better, like, iterate on it.
So do you have the computer kind of run a simulation and then you come back and be like, well, that didn't look very good, or that looked really good?
So yeah. So what I do basically is, like, I started out at EA and I was just strictly like an animator. I only worked in the software for making things move, and I worked with motion capture, and then I handed it off to someone else. Now I don't do much animation at all anymore. I'm working in the engine, putting things together. So a lot of my day is I might say I'm working with that, you know, that ninja guy, right? And I'm doing a walk, and I want him to run and karate chop someone. So it's like I build the system where I say, like, okay, it's in this state, and we're going to get to this state, and what blends am I going to use to get there? And I think I got it, and then I send it to the game, and then I test it out, and then I could look at all the conditions live. And then it's like, okay, well, this isn't exactly how I want it. So I'm going to go back in. Maybe I'm going to move this tag that says what this is and move it forward, or maybe trim the clip a little bit of the animation. Maybe that'll look better. So I'm constantly, like, all day long going in there and trying to finesse it and make it feel good, make it look good. And sometimes you don't have a choice. Like, you have to only make it feel good.
And so with the alternative to that being, like, on a more micro detailed level where you're, like, tweaking the position of, say, fingers, but you're saying no, you're doing these big blends between large motions.
Yeah, I'm onto the part of my career now where I'm basically in that zone where I'm putting together the big picture items, right? And then they, like, there's someone else that finesse the hands a little bit, right? And that's, you know, that's a whole other topic as well. Like, there's the whole world that you live in on that side of things too. With, you can automate there too. You can have a piece of software that has AI learning, machine learning, and it's like, we can do that if we need to. Like, what if we don't have the capability to pump out this game in a certain amount of time? Like, we need to, that's where the future is going with that too. But, like, yeah, I work on, so, like, taking, like, a basketball, for example, it's like, okay, I want LeBron to have this spin move this year, right? So how do I do that? So in that case, like, spin moves already exist, but maybe I want it to be a little bit slower. Okay, well, I'll put that in, and it's okay, it doesn't look that great. So I got to go back to the engine, and I got to say, maybe I need to go into the animation software and fix the hand or something. Maybe I could keep it the same speed, but make it look faster by doing a little trick here or there. Or maybe it works okay, and maybe my blend is not that great, or maybe I like it, but then when I play it with other players in the game, like, it's game breaking and it's, like, way too powerful. So it's like, okay, well, how do I make this look like it does now but not break the game?
I say, do you have to watch a lot of sports clips also to find, you know, that LeBron does spin moves, what it looks like, so you can replicate it and then check later, you know, beside the real clip to see if it even looks accurate at all? I imagine you have to watch a lot of sports clips to figure this out.
Yeah, I do that. But
you just do that normally.
But yeah, you don't necessarily have to. Like, there's systems built where, like, you're working with a team of people that someone will do that and mention it to you if you didn't do it right, you know? So it's like, it's definitely helps.
But like, how do you design a spin move if you don't know what a spin move looks like?
Okay, well, we could talk about motion capture. You want to talk about motion capture?
I think it's time to do that because we've mentioned it a few times, but some people might be asking, what is mocap?
So motion capture, you might have seen on, like, making of movies. It's like when a guy will get in a skin-tight bodysuit leotard.
Do you guys do that?
We do.
I always think of Gollum from the Lord of the Rings, the guy.
So he's the big guy, Andy Serkis. He's like the pioneer of, or the, he's the face. He's the social media face of motion capture. But that's the one where you're in a skin tight suit, and there's little reflective balls all over you. And there's lots of different types of motion capture, but that's the main one, where you could be in a room, a motion capture stage. And this is always changing as well. Like, there used to be like, you need to have like infrared, and like, now you can do markerless. So those are the markers, right? The balls. And that's the best way to do it right now, at least for a big time operation, is you're in a room, and basically, you have like up to like over 100 cameras, and they're looking for these little reflective dots on you. And then there's a group of people that are mapping those dots to a character skeleton, and they're assigning a skeleton to these things based on what this guy is. So for us, it's pretty simple, like humanoid things going to a humanoid body, like something like Lord of the Rings, doing like a giant like monster guy would be a little bit more difficult on how to get that motion and translate it over to something that looks totally different. Like, there's a little more like muscle in that, like trying to get that to work. But for our cases, it's like, we are tracking this person's motion. We've used all different sorts of methods. Like, we've done the markers with the reflective balls. We've done markerless, where there's no balls. There could be accelerometers or gyroscopes and different ways of doing it. So like a few years ago, the Xbox Kinect came out. Like, that's a way of doing motion capture, essentially. Like, whatever you were doing in front of your TV at that time, like 10 years ago or whenever that came out, like they're capturing your body based on your camera. So like, there's even technology coming pretty soon that they're getting close with, which is really cool. But also, there's a lot of like legal issues here, but like, you could get real motion capture data just from recording like a basketball game, right? Which is like, that means I could get like LeBron's actual dunk if this technology like ever comes to fruition.
Interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, like the camera is picking up multiple cameras are picking up these little markers and dots on your motion capture actor. And sometimes like a guy might roll on the ground or roll around, and like some of the dots are hidden. And then there's technology where it's like, it computes and figures out like what it should be doing. And there's ways to control that and finesse it. You might have to do multiple passes if you're the guy taking that data and putting it onto the skeleton. But anyway, a typical shoot would be something like, we have this ask from design. Like, we want this spin move for LeBron. And that one's a really easy one for us. Like, we have a video of him doing it. We don't usually want LeBron to come in there and do like a whole day of shooting if he's in the middle of a season for something like that. So it's like,
is it like your coworkers or actors or like the actual pros coming in doing
that? There's always professionals doing it. So basically, you say, do this spin move, and it's being shown on the video screen, and they have their reference of what to do, and you go through a few takes of it. And hopefully you get something similar, and you might have to try a few different actors. So depending on how close it comes back to what you're getting at, it's like, then the animator comes in, and this is after the fact, we've got the data back now, and they look at the motion capture footage, and they look at the data, and they look at the reference, and they say, okay, how close is this to what we're actually trying to achieve here? So for something like that, that's like a signature look. There's a lot that can go into like a lot more animation, but if you're just doing like a run or a run cycle like that, it's much easier. It's kind of more like straight out of the box. Like, this is pretty good. Like, we don't need to get too crazy here, but like, if you're doing a specific animation for someone that everyone knows, or a character that you created that you like, you want to keep consistent, then the animator takes it in their animation software. And we use something called Motion Builder. That's where I was talking about before. Like, you see on your screen, like, you see this character, and now the animation that you got for your motion capture session is on the character, and you make your assessment. What do you need to do to it? So, okay, like, well, let's say this guy needs to spin much faster. So how do we do that without making it look like it's just like fast forward, you know, like really fast? So,
and you can do it without needing to put the mocap suit back on the guy, right? At this point, you could manipulate it independently. Right.
Yeah. And sometimes you might say, well, we have another shoot coming up in a month. It would take me X amount of hours to do this by hand, or we could just try this again. So it might be something that you do like that. But we have the animation data now, and you finesse it, you grab the points. So think about like the stop motion animation, or like the, what we, people used to call claymation. Like you move the guy's arm a little bit, then you move a little bit more. And like, let's say the motion capture actor did a really good job, but like, I don't like the way his head was looking this way. You could just literally turn it, and now that's in the animation. You might need to take multiple versions of that and put it in the game. So now once you have that, then you send it over to the game engine, and we say, okay, so how can I do this spin and make it look good with what it could possibly come from? Okay, it's coming from a run, it's coming from a jog, it's coming from a turn, it's coming from standstill. So it's like we've already thought about that, you know, back at the motion capture stage. So like, it's like you see one thing, right, as a player, but like you don't realize also how much goes into it nowadays. Like we keep going back to that, like there's two animations, a stop and a start. Like now there's so much more. So it's like if I request that spin move, what happens if I'm facing away from the hoop? What happens if I'm being guarded by someone? Like that's a whole different animation. That's like I might dribble, I might spin into a guy and bump him and lose the ball. Now we're talking about a different feature. Now we're talking about steals and defense. So it's like just adding one little tiny spin move like that could totally bonk your whole game, or can make it awesome, or it could take months and months and months and multiple people working on this one little tiny feature. But like, again, back in the old day, it's like you just do one spin. Who cares? There might be a guy you go through like in the game.
That used to happen and we didn't even.
But now people expect so much more, but they're still on that timeline of the old days where it's like, oh, just a spin move. It's like we don't realize how much like actually goes into this one little tiny thing. And I'm just like giving this as an example. Like spin moves have been, we've got this covered, but like if you just want to add something little like that, like there's so much that goes into it.
You talk about a guy, you know, getting hit, you know, by another player. And I think of like his reaction based on if he gets hit, you know, lower body, middle body, upper body is a big reaction. And I mean,
right. Defender stealing at the same time?
Right.
Like I'm going to have a guy swiping at the ball now. It's like, there's so much that goes into it.
Do you guys or the computers have to bring physics into this, you know, and, you know, muscle and bone strength and.
That's interesting. The big players are going to react a lot differently than the little players.
Yeah. And there's different ways to do that. Like you could get a big old, motion capture actor and a little motion capture actor and do like we talked about, like, okay, this is the entire family set of spin moves and everything that would go into it and come out of it with this actor. And we just rotate. It's like, hey, now run down the court and do the spin at this angle and come out at this angle. Now you do it. And then we have a big Congo line of people doing it, all different styles, or we can do it. Like, we might not have the manpower or the time to do that. And we might have to come up with a solution. Like, how do we fake this? Can we slow down the animation maybe for a bigger guy? You know, can we adjust just the arms? Can we adjust just the legs? There's a whole avenue of places we can go now with tech where we can fake that sometimes.
So you mentioned that there was this trio of roles. It was the animator, the developer, I think, and then there was
designer.
The designer.
We're all developers.
Oh, okay, so you're all developers. So the animator, the designer, who was the third?
And the software engineer.
So where is the line drawn between what you do and animating and making it look good and real and the designer? Where is there overlap between those two roles?
I mean, I personally like when there is overlap, but it really depends on what team you're on. I've been on all sorts of different types of teams where it's like, sometimes it's like the designer is always does this and only does this, and animator sticks to your lane. And there's other times where we completely intermingle, and it also depends on the employees at this, like, is it a designer who can get his hands dirty and get into this part of things, and vice versa? Like, can an animator get into, like, I mean, for me on basketball, like, I did a lot of design because it was in my wheelhouse. I don't do as much of that in football. Like, you still get involved in design, but it's not, you know, it depends. It depends on the project, depends on the team. So there's room for everyone.
I think we should talk a little bit at this point. We always want to talk about how you got here. And we like to think that there might be somebody listening who is hearing this and saying, aha, this sounds like exactly what I want to do. How can I do this? So I hope those listeners are out there. But even if they're not, can you tell us what was your path like to get to doing what you're doing?
Well, that's tricky because it's evolved, right? So it's like I went to the Savannah College of Art and Design, and it was an animation school. But when I went, there wasn't even like a game track there. Like, it was like, you are going to be a film animator and that's what you're going to do. And then it's like, I went and you need that training, of course, but like, I don't do much of that anymore. But now there's all sorts of things, like YouTube exists now where it didn't when I went to school. So it's like, if you think that you might be interested in this, art school is very expensive, and it's too expensive. And for the amount of money that like artists usually make, it's not worth it unless like you feel like you really need it. So like, you could totally, if you are looking into getting into this, like, you could just go on YouTube and you can download free software, and you could download a free model and rig, and you could just try animation and see if you like it. And if it's for you and you feel like you want to go to school, then, you could explore that. But like, you could do it all by yourself right now. It's like totally school free if you needed to. Like, I no one's ever seen my GPA or anything like that. Like, you show, are you a good animator? It's like a gymnast. Can you do a flip? Okay, come work for us. It's like,
had you tried your hand at animation before going off to college?
No, I didn't do any animation until the third year of college, actually. So like, that it's tricky because it's like, luckily it worked out for me, but there's so many people who it didn't work out for, and you might not have been able to tell that until third year. You've already paid, you know, for half your extremely ridiculously high priced education, and you go, oh shoot, I don't like it.
So, and I'll also point out, although I was very young, I was there at the time, and I mean, that was truly an art degree. Like, you were producing all sorts of like drawings, paintings, like a serious, like, what I'll call what appeared to be like a classical art degree.
Yeah, so that's what it was. And again, like, you don't need that. You can have it, but it's not necessary. It certainly helps. Like, if I need to just sketch an idea, I can do that. And part of it is because I can draw, and I've been good at it, and I've been trained at it. So it's like, it's definitely helpful. But there's definitely people that don't have that, and they don't need it.
We had Mike Renault on recently, and he was talking about how some, like, it's the same thing with software engineers now, where you don't necessarily need to get a 4-year degree. But like, for example, one thing that's common for software now are these boot camps where you go just get a crash course in some sort of software engineer.
So you have a starting. I went to Animation Mentor, like, geez, I don't know, like 8 years after I graduated from SCAD, Savannah College of Art and Design. So after SCAD, I worked in the industry very briefly, and then like the market crashed in 2008, and I switched careers for a while, and I wanted to get back into it. And it's like, there's those options now, but that's part of the problem too. It's like, there are so many options for people to get schooling on this and to pay for it, that the market is just like totally flooded for people who want animation jobs. And there just aren't that many animation jobs. So it's like, you really need to make sure that you want to do this and that you are good at it. Otherwise, you're going to pay a lot of money, unless you go the route of like the YouTube and just put your reel together. But like, you, like, that's a dangerous path in this field now. I always like it, if ever I'm on like an airplane and like someone talks to me about animation, oh, my niece or nephew's trying to get into that, I was like, they should try it on YouTube first. Download this software that's totally free. Like, don't apply for the subscription of this. Like, just make something move. Do you like it? Okay, then think about moving forward.
I hear young kids talking about they like video games, they want to build video games. Was that ever a goal of yours? Or
never.
How did you get into video game
design? I needed a job. So I was in, I did like just, I didn't do feature. I did like commercials and stuff very briefly. And then I applied to EA and I had no experience in motion capture or motion builder, but the director at the time was a big Disney guy. And he basically, if you get someone like that, who's like, okay, I've seen your reel. I know you can animate. We can teach you the tools to translate it to what we do. So I got really lucky. I got someone like that was looking for someone like me, but I've turned out to really like it. And I like the fact that you're in complete control of the feel and the look and just that whole, the whole thing that comes with video game animation is it's a lot more in depth and there's a lot more tech to it. And like I said, right now, I don't really animate much. I'm building this thing that people are going to enjoy.
Do you play your own video games?
Yeah, I do. I regrettably am going to have to buy the new system, which is like $500 just to do that. But yeah, I'm going to have to do that.
I want to talk a little bit about the future because I don't want people to miss out on the fact that you are like under the hood. You're in the wheelhouse of what I'm going to call as a cultural phenomenon. I mean, there are so many people out there where like video games are just, they wake up and they play and they play before they go to sleep. And it just, they spend so much time doing it. And
I had roommates like that in college.
It's a totally new way of life that didn't exist like 30 years ago. There's professional gamers now who like earn money playing the games that you make.
So
and we just want to talk like where do you think the future's going with all of this?
I think everything's going to be in this sort of virtual reality video game space. Like think about like VR headsets and what they can do in the future, like augmented reality. And like you look on your phone for like Pokemon Go and like you hold it against something and against your door and there's a Pokemon on the screen, right? I'm sure like you're going to have glasses or something, or it's going to be built into your retina in the future or something like that. Who knows? But like that's all animation and like looking at things from a full 360 view. And you talk about like esports, like the top esports guys are making, you know, $15 million a year. That is a lot of money to play video games. Like that's, it's also, it is truly a sport though. It's like if, you know, ice dancing is a sport, this is your fingers and your mind. This is a sport. But like, unlike basketball, right? You might be good at Fortnite, but you might stink at Sonic the Hedgehog. But there's room for like all these games now, and there's ways to get into it. And then the automation thing. It's like, am I going to be replaced? Who knows? Maybe I need to get brushed up on the technical side. Like we're talking about. There's this thing on YouTube. Couple of years ago now, I think maybe last year or the year before that, where like basically they trained a character to dribble a basketball. This is separate from EA, right? Like this is not what I was doing, but like I was on YouTube, it was on all over social media, where they just fed the computer software all these dribbles and what it looks like to dribble and what the fingers look like when they dribble, what the ball looks like, and then this computer just like figured it out, like, and it's just bouncing a ball that was totally like automated. It was fed by like real life data and stuff like that. But
you have to think, if we ever get to the point where the games are so big where it's just these enormous ecosystems and people walking around and living in the game, we would need to have something like that. It would just be too much work.
Well, it's like, remember Lord of the Rings, like the two towers, like that battle scene, there's a lot of like automation going on there. They didn't animate like 5 million characters or whatever it was. Like there's procedures happening, like game style procedures. Like if a character, like, so in Madden, right, if you come up, you're controlling one guy out of, you know, 20 people on the field or whatever the number may be. And like there's AI characters that need to react. So it's like in the movies too, it's like you need to say, all right, if this guy is going to take a swing with his sledgehammer. Am I going to be hit by it? Am I going to defend it? Am I going to hit back? Am I going to dodge it? And then that guy is taking his information from thousands of other characters. Like, what are they doing? We can't have them all dodge at the exact same time. So there's like programming into like, how does that work? How does that look when we add more characters? Is there interpenetration? Do we need to bring physics into this and have collisions? And like, how does that look? There's a whole area of things where we can, like you said, like we need to come up with better ways to do things. And this is in a way to expand in all these different realms.
So what gets you excited about the future of gaming and game development?
What gets me excited? Boy, a steady paycheck.
I mean, that's valid as anything.
I don't know. It's like we were talking about. It's everywhere. There's a lot of money involved, and there's new technologies coming out. And I was talking to you, John, about this the other day. Like this guy Travis Scott, who's a musician in Fortnite. You guys gotta search it up when we're done with this. Just search for Travis Scott, but don't do the actual video. Like, do the reaction. So it's like basically like what Fortnite is like. It's this giant map, and you have like 100 characters on it. That every character is controlled by a human, and so you're all on your own consoles or, you know, computers, and you're controlling this. And there's Fortnite has its own objective, like you take down the other person. But there's this one thing that came out where he wanted to have a virtual concert. So I'm not super huge into music or concerts, but like everyone loved this. And you could see why, like watching their reactions. It was like pure joy and pure like excitement. So basically what it was is like they used animation, they used music, they used storytelling, all within this platform of this game. And the guy Travis comes on, like they're sitting there, like they join the concert, and they're all sitting there, and you can see each other, and they're interacting, and they could take a swing with their fists if they want, or they have these dance moves that they paid for, and the people are dancing.
Isn't Fortnite normally you go around like shooting people?
Right. So what they did was they had this concert mode, right? And just for this one time event.
So they had to agree to just watch the concert and not.
Yeah. So, but like everyone likes this guy. And it wasn't even that they agreed not to kill anyone. Like the studio made this new mode essentially for this one performance. Oh, so super cool. Like they're all sitting there, and like you're watching the live stream of like this. So this guy, we talk about esports, this guy Ninja, he's the one of the highest earners. Like, so he's live recording this, right? So, and they're just standing there, they're dancing. All of a sudden, like you look up, like you're not told to look up, but you see something in the sky, and there's this giant, really slow moving, like something in the sky. And they're all talking to each other, like, what is that? What is that? Is that like an asteroid or something? And like, there's a stage that they're looking at, and you can turn around and look the complete opposite way and not at it. But like, then you see everyone start to go look over at this thing, and it comes down, and like all of a sudden an explosion happens. And there's this like 500 foot Travis Scott, like now the song starts, and like there's fireworks going off, and like all these like graphical elements and lasers, and like it's just like this treat for the eyes. And now we're starting to get into the curation of like some artist like basically design this experience for you. But you're totally free in it. You are free to move around, you're free to run the opposite direction. But like this event happened, now he's like singing and dancing, and all of a sudden another explosion happens, and they all go flying in the air, and now you can fly. You've never been able to fly before in this game, right? So now people are experiencing this new gameplay element, but you're also a part of this concert, and like people were just eating it up. And I can see why. Like, it definitely looks really cool. It's not for me, but like, this is a whole new genre
and the fact that, so we've always had live music and recorded music, and the idea of like a digital concert isn't, you know, I feel like, you know, like YouTube, you watch a live stream of a concert on YouTube, yeah. Right? That's kind of the same thing. But all of a sudden now the video game enables you to not just watch it from a TV camera, but for you to be this digital avatar walking around in there.
You're a part of it. You're at it.
Yeah. And people are really getting into self-expression. They make it look the way they want. Some people make it look exactly like them. Some people might want to look like a fairy or whatever, you know, whatever, however they want to express themselves. And now you come into the monetary part too. Like, you can purchase things for it, or whatever. And like this event. I don't know. It's just so groundbreaking. And then it tied back into the game too. Like the last part of it, they were blown out into space and they're all flying. They're like, what's going to happen? What's happening? And like, they eventually brought them back to this like original Fortnite level. And everyone was like really excited about that. So there's so many possibilities there. And especially like now with like the COVID thing, it's like, well, you can't go to a real life concert, but this new thing just happened. And like, it allows me to listen to music I like. It allows me to experience this like visual art experience. I can experience like the freedom of having my own character that I can move freely and control my own path at the same time. It's wild. So there's a lot going on there.
Does any of this, are you concerned about anything? Does any of this concern you? Like the fact that humans are going to be increasingly living inside of an artificial world? Because it concerns me a little bit. In addition to the excitement,
kind of like Wall-E. If you've ever seen Wall-E, where they just eventually they're sitting in chairs their whole lives and they just become these fat like jelly beans, unable to move their limbs. I mean, is it avoidable? I don't know. Probably not. But we talk about Pokemon Go. Like that encourages people to get up and walk around. So now there's, you know, now there is these 3D glasses or the VR headsets that you can put on. So you are moving in that. Maybe that's where we're going. I'm not sure where we're going, but like, and then there's what was that movie, Ready Player One or something like that?
I haven't seen that one yet. Yeah,
I actually really liked it. But that whole movie was about like you. It's like your world exists, but like there's this curtain over it. So like you might be walking through a slum, but when your headset is on, you see this environment, kind of like the Travis Scott video. Like you see something totally different. Like this, there could be fireworks up in the corner of your view that don't really exist.
Well, that sounds like AR though, right?
Well, this is reality. Yeah, well, but what I'm saying, like this is in the movie though, like. Yeah. This is super, like really deep into the future, but like, who knows? Maybe that's where we're headed.
Maybe.
Like,
technology is moving fast.
It is.
The games to augment your perception of reality.
Yeah,
you know.
But I mean, I don't know. There's no way to say exactly where we're going, but there's a lot of cool, lazy features of life that we have now that you can just like imagine. What it was like 100 years ago, like you spent so much time doing the most useless task, and now it's done for you in a second. So I have all this extra time to like devote to entertainment and all even not just entertainment, but like your vacuum is a robot now, right? So it's like it's cool programming that we talked about that once. There's a whole team that studies like what is the current generation, like what is their attention span. It's like our attention spans were way different than like my kids now. Like my kids don't have to wait through commercials anymore. They don't know what it like. In the rare occasion that we watch something on TV that has a commercial on, they're like, "What is like?" It's just maddening to them. So it's like when you design your games and like your experiences, like you need to build things faster. Like you need to get to the action. No exploring.
I feel like I'm constantly bombarded with ads on YouTube though. They don't get those. It's like every 15, I'll watch a 30-second ad for a 15-second video.
Well, we've got the Netflix and the Disney Plus and that stuff like that. So, but they do watch stuff with commercials, but it's like we watch stuff with commercials. Like that was all we did. We had to go to the television at a certain time and we couldn't leave it.
And 15 years ago, you couldn't decide when the commercials were going to be,
right.
What the commercial was going to be. It was just there and you dealt with it.
If you got a phone call, you couldn't just pause the TV. Yeah. Like you missed the show and that's not coming back. You can't stream it the next day. So, but like, there's a lot of thought that goes into that. Like designing something, anything, a movie, experience, a game back then, it was a lot different than designing it now for like this generation. And they're trying to predict what the, you know, like what a 4-year-old would be like, because it takes, you know, 5 years to make a game sometime. What is that 4-year-old going to be like? What do we think they're going to like?
Do you design a game for a certain generation or do you need a wide appeal? And
you could do either. I mean, mine is, again, it's a different sort of category of sports game. Like this is football. We know what this is. We know what to expect. We already know who likes football, you know? But if it's another video game, yeah, you like Fortnite is really marketing a specific crowd. You know, it's like
high schoolers.
I would say middle schoolers and high school, like every, well, Fortnite, I shouldn't say that. Fortnite's got the whole crowd. They've got everybody. It's like the TikTok generation, right? It's like the dance moves are really popular. The songs, this concert, like this is, I didn't know anything about this guy, but he's pretty, I've heard his name. So it's like, we're out of the loop essentially.
James, I think we might be getting close to the most important question.
Well, we got one before that.
That's why I always want to ask, because you always come up with good stuff, and I want to jump to what's on my mind.
I mean, I only had one other question from the topic we were talking about, and it's kind of gone past, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
There's so much more.
my experience when it comes to sports is in the bleachers. I'm a sidelines guy. I'm not really a sports guy. But I used to go to college games and stuff. And do you have to animate the fans as well and their reactions and, you know, boos versus cheers, depending on if you're home or away? And I sit there bored most of the game, whereas John sits there excited most of the game.
Stand up when something exciting happens and start shouting.
So the fans are usually the last bit to get touched, right? So they're the last, we care about the gameplay. So that's another thing, gameplay versus presentation. Like I'm on the gameplay team. I should have said that. Like there's a presentation team that presentation is where you don't control user experience. Gameplay is I'm the user. What do they experience? Right. So it's like,
so you don't care what the stadium looks like.
So remember back in the early 2000s, what they looked like in video games. It's like you might have no finger motions on the characters on the court or the field, but the stands were just a cardboard cutout of a character.
It was just a static.
Right. So then we skip forward a generation and it's like, okay, well now they're all moving at the exact same time. And maybe the front portion of the stands is like a really rudimentary model that doesn't have articulating finger joints where everyone else on the game does. And it's like, but think about that. Like every time you add a hair piece or a hat or an article of clothing, like, that has to account in the memory budget. So
in the 37th row who spills his popcorn when the team scores or something.
Yeah. So that, that'd be so awesome. That's really heavy and expensive though. But yeah, it's, for me, I don't really pay attention to the stands, but I know some people really like, they'll pause the game. You go to YouTube, they'll pause the game. Like, why is this person wearing the same outfit as this other person? That's another cool thing is if you look in the stands of games, you will usually, for the most part, see employees of that game. They just use their models, their head model. Like my old bosses were all in the stands of NBA Live and stuff like that.
Are you in the bosses? Or are you in the stands?
No, I missed that part of the. I missed that generally. We don't do that much anymore because legalities and unions and all sorts of stuff like that. But yeah.
You know, we're also getting a merging of games and real life from the opposite end. I'll tell you why. Because now I live right across from Angel Stadium. The Anaheim Angels play in an empty stadium right now because of COVID, as do a lot of sports teams.
But you know what? Stands.
They have like. They have like videos or figurines of fans digitally there, some of which are actually watching the game.
Yeah.
You have to wonder at some point, are these going to merge?
I don't know.
Are they going to play video games in digital stadiums that might actually be real someday and have digital fans? It's just a fascinating.
Well, they do have something like that with VR headsets. Like they have this, I can't remember what it's called, but for the NBA, like they give you a front row seat and they've got like, you know, the whole camera setup on the actual arena floor. But like, if you have this app and this subscription, like it looks like you're at courtside. I saw the commercial. It looks amazing. Like we could do it together. And like your avatar would be next to me. We could high five each other.
That I would be very interested in that. Like VR courtside of a game. That sounds wonderful. To me, that sounds more exciting than like playing a game. It's just getting that experience. For the actual game that's being
played.
That'd
be so cool if like we had our own private, like not private, but like exclusive audio content for that too. Like if the audio was more closer to the court, you hear the players cursing at each other or whatever. yeah, that, I don't know, that was cool. But I don't know if you saw this. This is a current event, but the NBA does just like what we're doing, like video calls. And they had Obama at the last game. Everyone was like, why does Obama look like he's giving a speech? But he was giving a speech in the middle of him being a fan participant at the game. So he's going through this whole like thing, and we're just watching the game. He's like doing a full on speech. It's like, does he know that no one can hear him? But like someone like, actually could hear him. But yeah, it was pretty funny.
I have to go look at that.
It was fabulous.
Like giving a speech in the middle of the game.
So what advice would you give to a young person who's interested in doing what you do?
Like I said, go on YouTube, go look at some tutorials. If you do like it and you get into a school or something, definitely do an internship. I wish I'd done an internship. I feel like so many people have not gotten jobs that I went to school with, but any intern I've ever seen, it's like, I feel like they always wind up at the company. It's just internships are huge. I always have this knack of once you're at a company too, like I just wind up in meetings that I feel like I shouldn't be in, but because of it, it's like a George Costanza sort of thing. If I just show up to this meeting of executives, they'll just think I'm an executive at some point. So I'm privy to all this new tech and ideas talk. And so, yeah, just get yourself out there, get yourself on an internship, get yourself in the software, get yourself in these meetings that you don't belong. Eventually you too can become an animator.
You know, it's funny. I actually liked doing that too. Like I would, people be like, oh, I don't want to go to that meeting. It's got all like the executives in it. I'd be like, oh, when's that happening? I want to go to it.
But yeah, but like you find yourself in those meetings, right? And now you're on that list. So even though you shouldn't have been there, now you're on the follow-up emails. And now you know where the company in the future is going with this thing or that thing.
Interesting.
But it's back yourself into the industry, essentially.
But I saw just like you know, when you're just like a ground level employee, you're doing your basic task. But I always had liked the opportunity to go see from a higher level, like where are we going? Like who's making the decisions that lead to other decisions that lead to other decisions? Also the internship thing, this is becoming a major theme because several other people have said, yeah, get experience outside of your normal curriculum. Internships have come up clubs and everything. So this is a major theme that like a lot of people have said.
It's like that same thing though. It's like everything has to do with forcing yourself into the situation you want to be in, no matter what it takes. Is it going to take learning without going to school? Is it going to take going to school where there's a professor that knows this guy here? Is it going to take, you know, backing yourself into one of those meetings or like some sort of chance situation? Just put yourself in the area you want to be in, and internships is the best way. I wish I had done that. I could have shortcut 10 years off of my career if I had done that. I don't think the industry was mature enough at the time when I went to school. Like I never remember even hearing about it. So it's changed a lot. So, but yeah, get to know people, get on social media now. Like people who work in animation are really open to just sharing ideas, and like their chats are always open for questions and stuff like that. Like people will talk to you now. Like back in the old days, you hear stories like, oh, like I just called the desk of like four people that worked at Nintendo and I got a job that way. It's like, well, now that you can't just do that now. Like now it's Twitter. Now it's Facebook. Like get yourself on these channels where they'll talk to you and you can ask them questions. And then
do people do that with you? Do they reach out to you?
Oh yeah. I've got people asking for jobs all the time. Usually it's not for animation, but usually so sports games, there's a whole community of people that just have opinions, and they say that I know how to make this better. It's like, well, apply to the QA job. The QA is like quality assurance, like the testers.
Yeah.
But yeah. Like you could certainly get a recommendation from me if I know that you play this game a lot for that. So, but yeah, I've helped people with animation before, but it's not as common to just reach out like that. So, but yeah, that's force yourself into that life. Get out there. I think I got my job because of Twitter, actually, because at the time there was like 17 other animators that were on contract when I was there. and I was really vocal about basketball at the time. And I was working with other guys who had worked on like The Lion King and Beauty and the Beast that were much better than me. But like, I was really vocal about my love for the game I was working on and basketball and the topic that I was making a game for. So like, they're like, well, we need some more people that might know a little bit more about it. So like, I think Twitter definitely got me my job. So
since you knew so much about basketball, you got put on the basketball game.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
So just be in the space. So you always hear about stuff like that too. Like super fans will always get, you know, a role in a movie or something like that. Like, oh, you're a big Marvel guy. Like, oh, this Marvel guy has this claim to fame now. He had a role in a movie. Maybe you could expand that into a career. Who knows? Like, just put yourself out there. But that's how to do it now. Twitter, Facebook.
All right.
Are we ready for the last question, John?
This is, I've been waiting 2 months to ask this question. I need somebody to answer it right. Tim, what is your favorite pizza topping?
Well, what would you consider cheese? Is that a topping? Because a cheese pizza is a thing. It's a named pizza. But that is a default. I want a plain pizza. So the correct answer is no topping. But if we want to get really specific, cheese, like, sauce, and dough. That's it. That's the gold medal slice. The pizza that will be judged by all other pizzas.
That is the correct answer. And
you were talking the other day, another podcast, about pepperoni. That's just, you're just eating a big sausage at that point. That's not a pizza anymore. It doesn't taste like pizza. A pizza is this combination of cheese, sauce, and dough. If I had pineapples on it, that's a powerful thing. Pepperoni is super powerful. That is no longer, like, you put pepperoni on pasta, it's going to taste very similar to your pepperoni pizza. I'm
the devil's advocate here, though, because let's just say you take any other food. You take a hot dog and you put mustard on it. It's still a hot dog. It's just a hot dog with mustard on it. You put pepperoni on a pizza, it's still a pizza.
But if you put mustard on baked ziti, it's still going to taste mostly like baked ziti with a horrible mustard taste. But if I put pepperoni on baked ziti, now that pepperoni is so strong, it is coming for me. That's going to taste like pepperoni. You're going to be burping pepperoni. You're not burping pizza.
Did you hear the backstory about why pepperoni became the classic topping?
I don't know if I want to know about it.
You what?
I don't know if I want to know about this.
Oh, it was actually very interesting. Because as it turns out, like, if you ask, like, why is, like, who eats pepperoni unless it's on a pizza, right? It goes so hand in hand. But it wasn't always that way. It turns out that pepperoni actually has a very long shelf life. Mm. So for these pizzerias in New York City, and they're trying to think, what topic can I put on? A lot of these other ones, they need to be refrigerated, they're fresh. But this pepperoni, besides the fact that it tasted good, you could just put it on your shelf for like 6 months. And it never went bad. It's a sausage. You shave it up and put it on
the pizza. Doesn't that just shout at you? Maybe this is a reason why you should not eat pepperoni pizza. Here's this product that can withstand a nuclear blast and mold and all other food.
Pickles will last in my, you know, cabinet for months too. You know, should we not be eating those?
Well, I tell you what, if you put pickles on a pizza, it's not going to taste like a pizza anymore.
See, that's true. I agree. So
we had like buffalo chicken pizza once, because we went to a restaurant and it was the only thing, like, you couldn't get a plain pizza there. It was like one of those artsy places.
Was it California? That's like what we have over here.
No, but like I could have just taken that off and eat it and got the exact same flavor. There was no pizza there. There was nothing there that said pizza. It was, you know, spicy, you know, the worst part, powerful buffalo chicken. No.
The worst part about like the barbecue and like the buffalo sauce and the pizzas is it looks like tomato sauce, and you might not know that it's not tomato sauce until it's in your mouth. And then
I've got this built-in alarm system that says if there's a slight tint of bright neon orange to go away from it, and that's what buffalo has to it.
One thing I want to point out is, you know, I've been to the house you guys grew up in. I've been to your hometown in New York.
Yes.
And, I, you know, being New Yorkers, you guys have strong opinions about pizza. And yeah. I was there. I was driving through once, and I had lunch with your father at a local pizzeria.
And I wasn't even there. I was in another state at the time. You just dropped by.
I was just on the way through. You know, he's not too far off the interstate, and I stop and I said, "Yeah, your father took me to this place." And John goes, "Well, that's the fourth best pizza place in town."
Yep.
And I was like,
"The one right near the AMP?"
No, I think it was Pizza Express.
Is at the corner? Yeah, it's the corner of 55 and 82.
Oh, yeah, 55 and 82. Yeah, in my judgment, that's the fourth best one in town.
And I was like, you really have strong opinions if you've ranked that far down.
What's also the question? Like, how do you define the town? Like, if you go a little bit further out, those numbers
might.
Well, I mean, take anything, though. Like, if you have a chocolate chip cookie that's fresh out of the oven compared to one that's in a sealed bag that's been there for 2 weeks, there's a difference. There's a difference in pizza. There's a difference in everything. Pizza gets everyone's supposed to love all pizza. No.
I haven't done a definitive ranking of the top seven pizza places in my town. I go, it's good or it's not.
Well, big mistake.
You go to New York, and I've been to Maine. They don't have this. You know, even where we're from, which is in like relatively upstate New York, you know, I worked on a cow farm. Like, we're not talking about Manhattan here. There's still a pizza place like in every little strip mall. And they're all different, and some of them are good, some of them are not so good. But, you know, compared to the L.A. pizza, they're all pretty darn good.
Well, here in Florida, there is like in New York, there is a pizza place on every corner. And they're all called Anthony's, and they're all separate establishments, and they're all bad.
See, but the pizza place your father took me to is, I thought it was pretty good. You know, for me, it was a decent slice.
Well, you have a lot more to live by than you have more experiences of delicious pizza that we have yet to give you, and your poor taste buds are.
Wait till you try the second best in town. That'll really blow your mind.
You took me to the second best place in town a couple years later.
Yeah, you know what's sad? It's actually been so long. I don't even remember what the name of that pizzeria is. That's the one that's on the corner of 55 and Titusville Road.
Oh, you didn't take me there. You took me to it's almost like somebody's house kind of off the side of the road.
Mama Giuseppe.
I don't even remember that one. All right. Well, yeah, it's been a while. Unfortunately, I haven't lived in that region for a good time. But all right. Well, we're at an hour and 20 minutes. And one of our recurring criticisms was sometimes if it goes longer than an hour, people lose focus, which to me,
well, that's why
just split it into two. I don't understand what the problem is there.
Let them lose focus. They don't want to talk about pizza, then scram. Taking over this podcast.
One more thing, Tim, that we want to give you an opportunity to do is if people want to follow you, like you mentioned Twitter or anything else, people say, "Hey, I really love this guy. I want to hear what he has to say." How can people follow you?
Well, I'm on Twitter, and I don't know my name, but I'll give it to you after the show.
All right, we'll put it in the show notes.
It's like at Tim Roberts and Tim J. I think it's at Tim J. Roberts. Yeah. Anyway, ask any questions you want. Feel email. Free. You can put my email there too. I doubt anyone will ever ask a question based on this podcast, but go for it. I'll give you $10 in pizza dough if someone contacts me based off this podcast.
All right. Somebody, please, if anybody is listening, that's all you have to do, and then we get pizza. I'm going to leave this in the show.
You're going to have to live stream it and give it a full review.
Does it have to be email?
No.
It could be Twitter.
Or Twitter.
If somebody out there, I'm not going to push anyone to do this. If somebody mentions this whole little mini conversation on Twitter, hey, give Johnny that pizza.
You'll help feed some budding podcasters.
If this goes viral.
All right.
Well, Tim, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you. And I'll see you later.
Yeah, see you later.